Welcome to the Lynn Rivers Show. I'm Lynn Rivers. With tax day fresh in our minds, we'll spend this hour talking with Scott Klinger from the group Business for Shared Prosperity and Joe Rotella, a small business owner. We'll discuss a new report on the impact of corporate tax havens on Main Street America. The report lays out the impact of corporate tax dodging on small businesses and everyday Americans. Today's tax law is a Byzantine maze of loopholes, dodges, and thinly veiled favoritism, but most people shrug it off, disgusted but accepting. My guests say no more. They say that every time a corporation hides its earnings offshore and avoids its taxes, you and I and local businesses pay. Joining me today is Joseph Rotella. He is the owner of Spencer Organ Company in Waltham, Massachusetts, and is a leader with Business for Shared Prosperity. Welcome, Joe.
Hi there. Thank you, Lynn.
Thanks for coming today. My second guest is Scott Klinger. He is the Director of Tax Policy at Business for Shared Prosperity, a national network of forward-thinking business people. He is co-author of the BSP report's The Business Case for Restoring Tax Rates for High-Income Taxpayers to Pre-Bush Levels and Unfair Advantage, The Business Case Against Tax Havens. Scott, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lynn.
First, you guys are part of a coalition that's promoting this particular report and the idea that it's time to close off these tax loopholes to essentially keep these large companies from moving profits offshore and keeping them untaxed. So, Scott, I'm going to turn to you first. Talk about your coalition.
Right. So, First Business for Shared Prosperity is a network of about 2,000 business owners and executives from around the country. We first came together about 5 years ago to work on raising the federal minimum wage, and after that worked on the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and now our work is on ending tax haven abuse in the United States. We are part of a bigger coalition called the FACT Coalition, which is the Financial Accountability and Corporate Transparency Coalition, which is a very broad coalition of small business groups, labor groups, human rights groups, environmental groups, and groups that believe in tax justice and corporate transparency, and we've really been the place where we've done our work on tax haven abuse, which costs the American public, the U.S. Treasury, about $100 billion a year, so mm-hmm. $1 trillion over 10 years.
All right. I want to turn to you, Joseph.
Sure.
You are a business person. You're involved with
Business for Shared Prosperity?
Right, Shared Prosperity. First, what is your business, and how did you get involved with the organization?
Well, our business is pipe organ restoration.
Ooh.
It's a bit obscure, but we still operate as all businesses do. If we don't make money, we don't stay in business. And I've always had a really strong environmental and social justice aspect in my life. And with the business, it's given me an opportunity to bring that into my business as well. And we got involved with the Sustainable Business Network and connected up with the Business for Shared Prosperity as a way to instill our values, my values as a person, into my business, where the profits are not just the only thing that's important, but we also care about the planet and people, be it our employees and our surrounding neighborhoods.
So you're involved with BSP. Do you reach out to other businesses? I mean, how do other businesses find out about you? How do they become involved?
The way that we do it in the Boston area is through the Sustainable Business Network. Of small, like-minded business owners who all come together. And in that group, we've talked a bit about this more national group of Business for Shared Prosperity.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about sustainable business, what do you mean?
I guess it means for us, I can speak for me, where it means wanting to reduce our impact on the environment, but also be very concerned about taking care of our employees, making sure mm-hmm. people are getting livable wages, benefits like health insurance, and that sort of thing.
So you essentially stand for the idea that management and labor don't have to be enemies.
Correct. I mean, I take my responsibility as a business owner very seriously, and my responsibility as an employer very seriously. We put a lot of money into and training into our employees, and I understand that if I have a really good set of employees, they're making the company money, and that makes me money.
Listeners, this is the Lynn Rivers Show, and today we are talking about corporate tax havens, and my guests are Joseph Rotella, he is the owner of Spencer Oregon Company in Waltham, Massachusetts, and Scott Klinger, he's the director of tax policy at Business for Shared Prosperity. Scott, I want to turn to you. You have this national organization, and anytime I deal with a group like that, I ask them, where does your money come from?
Well, our biggest pots of money have come from members who have made donations. And then we also, in the last year, have gotten a piece of a grant from the Ford Foundation to advance some of our media work.
Okay. So you're not beholden to a particular business interest or a particular labor interest or any other group?
Nope, just the interest of our members who fund us.
Okay. All right, let me turn to the report and the issue, and I'm going to turn to you, Scott. What's the problem here? What is it that you're trying to bring to the public's attention?
Well, I think the bedrock issue is tax fairness, and particularly the role that businesses should pay in funding the goods and services that we all depend on, including the business community. We try to look both at historical data as well as international comparisons of other countries like our own. And when we look across time, we know that in the 1950s, corporations, the corporate income tax, federal income tax, provided about a third of the costs of the U.S. federal government. Last year, it was under 8%. So corporations, through this very riddle, the loopholes in the corporate tax code, are just not paying what anything like they used to pay. In fact, the Congressional Budget Office earlier this year found that last year corporations only paid about 12.1% of their income in taxes. And just for a couple of comparisons, the economists often measure corporate profits and corporate taxes as a percent of the whole economy, as a percent of the gross domestic product. And when they do that, they find that corporate profits are at a 50-year high. They're about 10% of the GDP. Corporate taxes are about 1% of the GDP, and they're at a 50-year low. So we have this very odd spread of corporations really stepping away from their responsibilities to pay for the services they receive and the services the rest of us receive.
Okay. I found a description of BSP. And it was said, BSP is playing a lead role in business advocacy for important individual and corporate tax policies, such as increasing taxes on the wealthy and ending corporate tax haven abuse. You know, when those issues seem to be discussed, there's oftentimes this claim, this class warfare. Is BSP engaging in class warfare here?
No, I think we're engaging in fairness, and one of the reasons we're doing this work is because small businesses are often held up as a shield by very large, wealthy corporations and America's wealthiest individuals with a claim that if we raise a tax or close a loophole, that we'll be harming the small business job creators in this country. And that's simply not true. We recently, last week, I guess, had the vote on the Buffett rule, which would have assured that millionaires paid at least as much as middle-class families on their federal income taxes. And once again, we saw that small businesses were held up as a foil to avoid
a fig leaf.
Tax. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so the very, very few small businesses, like 1 or 2%, have any incomes anywhere near $1 million. We did a survey of small businesses, which we might want to get into a little later, at the end of last year, and we surveyed 500 small businesses in a random scientific poll, not our members, just random small businesses, and only one of those 500 people surveyed had an income of $1 million or more.
So we're talking about real small businesses.
Yeah, real small businesses that operate on Main Street, restaurants, dry cleaners, manufacturers.
Right. When I say real, I don't mean really small. I mean real life, mom, pop, individual proprietor kinds of businesses.
Yeah. Oftentimes things like hedge funds and doctors, networks of doctors, doctors partnerships, things like that. Technically are classified by the government as small businesses, but that's not what most people are thinking about.
Well, I'm going to turn to Joseph in a minute to talk about being a small businessman in this climate and with these sort of rules. But before I do that, Scott, tell me about tax havens. Give the listeners some sort of definition here.
So there's not a definitive list of what a tax haven is, but a tax haven is a country in the world that has two things. One, it has laws that protect financial secrecy and make it a nice place to shelter money or hide money where law enforcement authorities and tax authorities can't have easy access to it. The second thing they feature is very low or no rates of income tax on certain kinds of income, corporate income or individual income. And so we're particularly concerned with the corporate part of it. The corporate part tends to be legal. We call it tax avoidance. Mm-hmm. When individuals use tax havens, it's often tax evasion, which is illegal, and the IRS is trying to do a good job to prosecute some of that. But the piece we're talking about is the corporate piece. And what a company will do, the companies that most take advantage of this are companies with intellectual property, with trademarks or patents or things like that. So an example of a drug company where they might do research and develop a new drug in the United States in a lab that's largely staffed by scientists who have been educated in this country. They take the patent from that discovery and they register it in a place like Luxembourg that has very little taxes on royalty income for corporations. And then when they use that patent, they charge a very high price for using it on the justification that the pill is really not worth anything unless it has the intellectual property in it.
And the exclusivity,
so,
right.
Yeah, and so they basically shift most of the profit from that sale that they make to you or I to Luxembourg and leave all of the costs in this country, the costs of research, of management, of all the drug sales forces. And so they tell the IRS that they really didn't make any money on selling you that $2 pill $20 pill. And then they take a loss in the United States, and when they have a loss, they don't owe taxes. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, all this money builds up overseas, and now we hear them complaining because all of their cash is trapped overseas. Well, it's trapped because they used accounting acrobatics to make sure it was trapped there, and now they want to bring it back at a very low and discounted tax rate in order to reinvest here. And our thrust is that we should close these loopholes and make sure the money doesn't leave in the first place. And then it would be here to do things like build factories and other things.
Well, one of the things that is perceived as being sort of absolute death politically is raising taxes. And certainly, even when I was there, any time there was discussion about closing loopholes, any time there was a discussion about eliminating tax favoritism, there were a number of individuals and groups who would immediately run to the microphones and say, raising taxes, raising taxes. Does the closure of these loopholes, creating new reporting requirements, the kinds of things that your group is promoting, is that going to be difficult for political decision-making because it's going to be perceived as raising taxes?
Well, I think it's really hard to call this raising taxes. We're trying to enforce the tax laws that are there. And it's not monolithic. It's not all large corporations are avoiding their taxes. It's very problematic even within large corporations. I'll give you an example. Walmart's the largest corporation in this country. They don't have a lot of opportunities to transfer their income overseas, so they actually pay a tax rate that's in the high 20s or low 30%. Other large companies, General Electric, Verizon, people have seen the lists, get away with paying very little or nothing or even getting large refunds year after year. It's not that being a big company means you get a pass on your taxes, but, some big companies get huge passes and other companies end up paying a reasonable share. So, we're trying to just bring fairness between big business and small, and even among big business, back into the tax code.
Today I'm talking with Joseph Rotella. He is the owner of Spencer Organ Company in Waltham, Massachusetts, and Scott Klinger, the director of tax policy at Business for Shared Prosperity. And we're talking about the effect of corporate tax havens, tax loopholes, and their effect on small businesses here in America, as well as everyday Americans. And Joseph, I want to talk to you right now as a small business owner.
Sure.
You're there in Massachusetts. as all of these profits go offshore, as all of this tax avoidance goes on, what impact does that have on you as a small business person, both in terms of your tax load, services from the government that might be available to you, and competitiveness?
Right. Well, Lynn, I think that the biggest issue to me is one of fairness. I mean, I'm happy to pay my taxes, actually, at the end of the year, because there's a realization that my taxes go to services that help my business to prosper. And the roads and the security and the schools that I use and that my clients use and have available to them make my business possible. What really bothers me is when I see not every large corporation, but some large corporations being able to shield money and not pay their fair share of taxes so that they can, I mean, they're still taking advantage of the services of being in the United States, of the school systems to educate employees, of the roads, of the bridges, of all of these different services, but they're not paying their fair share to help promote that infrastructure.
So it means that all of us have to shoulder an additional burden.
Correct. And so what it means for me, I mean, luckily I'm in a field where we're not competing against large corporations. But some of the people that I do business with in terms of hardware stores, other service providers, are in competition with large corporations, and it's really unfair to them. We shop at a local hardware store. That person is living in my community, and they pay their taxes and for services that are in their community, and they have a hard time competing with the mega stores, the mega corporations that can afford to hire attorneys and tax accountants and set up offshore accounts to ship profits offshore.
Mm-hmm. So the people who are getting the tax benefits, their products cost less.
Correct, because they can undercut people, but they're doing it by not paying their fair share of taxes, amongst other things, of course.
So the argument is, look, these people are not paying their fair share, and that means that the burden is shouldered by all of us. But Scott, I want to turn to you because I'm sure you follow sort of governmental decision-making here. When we're faced with the kinds of budget difficulties that we have today, both at the state and the federal level, you say it's $100 billion a year, which doesn't seem like a lot, but would that make it easier for the federal government, for example, to begin to deal with the deficit, to deal with services that go out? In other words, this $100 billion, while it doesn't seem like a lot of money in the larger scheme, it's actually a whole bunch of money in reality. Do you see that that would, you know, what kind of impact would it have on the government if those dollars were coming in instead of being essentially avoided?
Well, we had this whole super committee debate last fall on how to cut $1.3 trillion out of the deficit over the next 10 years. And that $100 billion a year, that's an annual figure. So that's $1 trillion over 10 years. So simply by closing tax haven loopholes for individuals and corporations would have got Congress almost all the way towards their $1.3 trillion goal. Instead, because they're not willing to do that, we're looking at deep cuts in things that American families and American small businesses depend on: education, highways, infrastructure, safe water, safe sewer, safe bridges, all the things that in all of our communities are deteriorating.
Small Business Administration loans.
Yep, Small Business SBA loans, veterans benefits, things that are bedrocks of American values and things that are parents and grandparents have bestowed upon us, we're neglecting, all in order to give those at the very top very large tax breaks.
Well, I want to talk about, I would love to name names, but if you feel uncomfortable doing that, I want to talk about some of the things that these corporations are receiving from this ability to avoid taxes, profits, very high. Some of these folks get government bailouts and contracts, and then you've got people who don't pay any taxes at all, or corporations that don't pay any taxes at all. Let's talk about first about profits. Are these companies that are very, you know, struggling to get by, or are these robust companies?
The vast majority of them are very robust companies making billions of dollars in profits a year. I'll give you one name to name, Boeing, the large aircraft and military contractor. Boeing, over the last 9 years, has gotten more than $50 billion of federal government contracts paid for by taxpayers. They've made more than $1 billion in each of those 9 years, and in only one of those 9 years did they pay any federal income taxes at all. Their tax rate over the nine-year period was negative 7%. That means they got 7% of their profits back from the IRS in forms of refunds or credits.
So they get government money coming in with the contracts. They avoid paying taxes, so they don't lose any money to the government, and then they get a refund of taxes back from the government. So
right.
They get taxpayer money front and end.
Right. And they, you know, I think this is a safe statement to make, but I think if the government contracts went away, Boeing wouldn't have much of a business. So, you know, really the taxpayers are the ones keeping them in business for their work on the defense industry and other things.
You are listening to the Loon River Show, and today we're talking about corporate tax havens and the effect it has on small businesses and everyday Americans. And my guests are Joseph Rotella, he is a small business owner in Massachusetts, and Scott Klinger, who is the director of tax policy at Business for Shared Prosperity. Scott, I want to continue on with this idea of who these companies are. Now, according to the PIRG report, we have a number of companies who got bailouts from the government in 2008 when the economy went kablooey, and they are paying no taxes or very little taxes because they're engaged in this kind of a tax avoidance. Can you name names? Can you talk about that?
Well, PIRG found, PIRG used data that Citizens for Tax Justice, which is another wonderful group, if your listeners don't know about, they should. They looked at the 30 companies that paid no federal income tax between 2008 and 2010. And one of the things they looked at that was really interesting was their campaign contributions. And these companies collectively that paid no taxes gave $41 million to members of Congress between 2006 and 2012, which is one of the reasons, and that money was heavily channeled towards people who are on the House Ways and Means Committee and the Senate Finance Committee, the two committees that have tax writing responsibilities. So this is the way the system is perpetuated. One of the companies I know that got a big bailout, I'm not sure if it's in the PIRG report or not, but is AIG, American International Group, which got the largest of the TARP bailouts. And they essentially, by bailing them out, the U.S. government reimbursed them for their losses, gave them back the money they lost. But Congress did not strip them of their ability to use those losses in future years to reduce their taxes. So this past year, AIG reported more than $1 billion of profits. They're back, trying to right themselves. They reported $1 billion of profits, but they used these massive losses they had from 2008 to write off against those profits, and they pay no taxes last year, and they're likely not to pay taxes for a decade in the future because the losses were so great. Elizabeth Warren is running for the Senate in Massachusetts, who was the brainchild behind the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, called this a second stealth bailout, in decrying it. And other members of the TARP Oversight Board have said similar things. So this is the sort of thing that happens day in, day out in terms of Washington politics that allows this crazy system, a system that robs all of us of the revenues we need to build the kind of communities we want. And it's business as usual, and it needs to stop.
Well, you mentioned the PIRG report on the loopholes for sale. That's the name of the report from U.S. PIRG, and they're talking about the relationship between contributions by big corporations and the resulting tax policy that comes out of it. I just pulled this up. In the last 2 years, or the 2 years between 2008 and 2010, large corporations contributed, or the 30 companies, the Dirty 30, contributed $3.1 million to current members of the House Ways and Means Committees. They have jurisdiction over tax policy, and 1.9 million to members of the Senate Finance Committee. Now, in general, lots of money goes to members of Congress in all committee positions, but a significant amount of the money overall goes into the hands of these two committees. Is there any way to curb this? Is there any way to either make it more transparent? You work on transparency issues, to make it more transparent or to limit this in any way? Or are we just simply hamstrung?
Wow, you could spend a whole show on money and politics.
Yes, I know.
I'm sure you have. I don't know. You know, we see these crazy things where companies avoid their taxes and give all these political contributions. I worked on a report last fall that looked at 25 of the highest paid CEOs who got more in pay than their companies paid in taxes to the federal government. I think the best tool we have right now is some sunlight and trying to shine light on these things and hopefully embarrass companies that are behaving this way.
Or members of Congress.
And members of Congress as well, right.
I want to come back to some of the proposals that you've got out there, Scott, that you've been working on, but I want to turn to Joseph. Joseph,
sure.
when you do your business taxes every year, are any of these loopholes, any of these tax benefits available to you as a small business person?
Well, we're an S corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a wonderful accountant who's been doing my taxes for over a decade. And no, I mean these kind of offshore tax havens are not available. Not in terms of the amount of money it would take to set them up. For our kind of profits, no, they're not really
You're paying the whole freight. You're paying all, you have an obligation to the country, and you pay your taxes without any of these sort of special treatment opportunities.
Correct. And let me just point out too that there's a couple of issues that I've heard said on the other side. One is that so everybody understands, we're talking about taxing profits of a company, not taxing the money that the company takes in completely, but just that at the end of the year, what is it left? What is it made for money? And so the argument on the other side is always, well, if you close these loopholes, that's increasing taxes and that's going to kill jobs. I just don't buy that, because we're talking about money that is being dispersed out anyway. It's not associated with how many jobs.
It's not payroll money.
Right. Right.
Well, isn't that the argument that the American oil industry is making, that if we close the loopholes, the tax favoritism that they enjoy, their profits will be reduced, not eliminated, reduced, and then they will have to essentially send that cost on to the consumer in order to maintain these high profits? Is that the sort of argument that we're seeing out there with big business?
I've heard that argument, and maybe that would be the case, but maybe it would actually make things more fair,
mm-hmm.
so that big businesses don't have these huge advantages and smaller businesses would be happy to fill in that gap.
Scott, I want to turn to you, and I want to throw out some terms here so that you can help listeners understand what this means. You talked about deferral of profits and that some of these large corporations are really benefiting from that. What does that mean?
So the United States has a what it's called a worldwide tax system. Corporations are expected to pay income taxes on money they earn anywhere in the world. But there's a provision that says if you earn the money outside the United States, offshore, you don't have to pay until you bring that money back to the United States. So that provision of saying you can defer your tax payment until you bring the money home is called a deferred system. And this is really what's being abused by companies that are using tax havens. We have no dispute, for companies that, a food company that has a factory in Holland to make cereal and sells it to consumers in France. That makes total sense. They shouldn't, that should be taxed in France and Holland and places in Europe. It's when you move money specifically to avoid paying your taxes to a place like the Cayman Islands or the island of Jersey off the coast of the UK or Luxembourg, you know, for no other reason. And there's nothing there. Coca-Cola recently confided to Senate investigators that they brought back a huge amount of money from the Cayman Islands a place where they had no employees and no facility. All they had was a post office box and a brass nameplate on a wall. It's not an indictment of Coke. They're far from being alone, but that's the way it works. There's an office building called Ugland House in the Cayman Islands that's home to tens of thousands of U.S. businesses. And there's, you know, the only people that work there is somebody assigned for the FedEx packages and somebody to clean the floors.
Well, one of the things that sort of shocked me is they can claim that their profits are offshore, but they can put that money in American banks.
That's
astonishing.
Yeah, they put their money in the foreign affiliates of American banks, so the Citigroup subsidiary in the Cayman Islands or in Luxembourg. And they basically can do anything that they could do if they brought it home. They can borrow against it. They can make a loan, you know, and not technically bring the money back because it's still, you know, legally sitting in the tax haven. But they can bring it home, and they